morning in our sermon. Matthew chapter 8, verses 18 through 22. Just remember the things that have gone on immediately before this, the preaching of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus coming down the mountain, and all the people following him, and then the leper coming, and Jesus miraculously healing that leper. And then the centurion who came and appealed to Jesus on behalf of his servant that he would be healed from, or the servant would be healed from paralysis and pain. And Jesus did that without even going there. Then we remember that that Jesus had visited the house of Peter, the Apostle Peter, and his mother-in-law had been sick, and Jesus healed her as well. What we're going to find today in the passage we're going to consider is there's kind of an interruption between miraculous healings, because we know that healing is not the only thing Jesus came to do, and it's not something that just absolutely dominates every bit of the Gospels, that there's also teaching, and there's also other matters of life that Jesus addresses at different times. What he's going to talk about today, really, basically you could come down to one little sentence, and that is, what is the cost of discipleship? Okay? Two different people are going to come to him, and the two people have different problems. One of them really had, they've come to him, and they profess faith, evidently, but they haven't really counted the cost of what it means to follow him as a disciple. The other one is evidently has some interest in Jesus and his ministry, but other things tend to take priorities in his life. And so he's challenged. Jesus challenges both of these two people in a special way. And I don't know about you, but those things that we just mentioned are things that I struggle with, and I'm assuming that all of you do as well. So we have a lot to learn from these few verses. But anyway, verse 18, and when Jesus saw a crowd around him, he gave orders to depart to the other side. And a certain scribe came up and said to him, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." And Jesus said to him, "The foxes have holes, and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." And another disciple said to him, "Lord, permit me first to go and bury my father." But Jesus said to him, "Follow me and allow the dead to bury the dead." Well, we understand this, that there are places in the Gospels that talk about how large crowds would gather around Jesus. This, Jesus is probably at the height of his popularity now. He's becoming well known in the area of Galilee, and we're going to find there are actually people that come all the way from Jerusalem at times to listen to what Jesus is saying and to be witness to the healing, and sometimes to bring people that need to be healed, or to bring yourself who had some affliction that needed to be taken care of. Sometimes we find Jesus lingering with the crowd. We're going to find that when he gets to the feeding of the 5,000, that the crowd leaves and the crowd actually follows him somewhere else, and he continues to minister to them. But we also know this: there's times when Jesus had to get away from the crowd. We have to remember that Jesus is a person, is a man, just like we are. Has the same needs. His body gets tired. He gets thirsty. He gets hungry. Sometimes it almost seems as though he gets impatient. And very often it's with the disciples, because he just can't seem to learn the lessons that he lays before them constantly. An encouragement to you, an encouragement to me. It's time for him to leave. And he knows it. Just remember, they're in Capernaum on the western shore of the Sea of Galilee. Very often you're going to find Jesus traveling in a boat. And that's always when he's getting from one side of the Sea of Galilee to the other side. And one of the reasons possibly that he thought it would be a good idea to call Peter and Andrew and James and John as disciples, because these guys were fishermen. These guys had boats. It's time for him to leave. But before he does that, there's a scribe that comes up to him. And he says this to him. He says, Jesus, I will follow you wherever you go. Now, how many times do you think Jesus has heard people say that very same thing to him? Only to find out later on that they really did not understand what that meant. And to find out they really were not that willing to go wherever he would take them to be. It's kind of interesting that you have a scribe here coming up to Jesus and calling him teacher, because scribes were acknowledged to be teachers. They made their living by transcribing the Bible. In other words, if you want a copy of the scroll of Isaiah, you went to a scribe, unless you could write it yourself, which I guess some people would do. Very often you would go to a scribe and you would pay them money to sit and make you a copy of the book of Isaiah, or the scroll of Isaiah. Because that was true. They spent a great deal of time in the Word. And because of that, they were acknowledged to be experts in the law. They were also considered to be primarily teachers of the law because of the great knowledge of it. So it really is interesting that you have a scribe coming and acknowledging Jesus as teacher. Well, ultimately, we know with this fellow that the difficulty is that he really hasn't counted the cost of what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. I would say that's probably happened to just about everyone that's ever made a profession of faith in Jesus. Let me ask you this. As you become a believer and you begin to live as a believer, have you found your life to be always the easy street, always the easy path? Never any bumps, never any humps, never any valleys, just smooth sailing. Have you really experienced that joyful, victorious Christian life? Here comes a fellow, and he's, you know, we don't know how much he knows about Jesus. Maybe he just came on the spot here, or maybe he's been around here for the last couple of days, and he's listened to Jesus preach, maybe the Sermon on the Mount. Maybe he was there and he saw him heal the leper and some other people. And maybe one of the things going through his mind is, you know what, hanging around with Jesus would be a good thing, because if you ever get ill of anything, he can just speak the words or touch you and you're going to be healed. Maybe. You know, it's partly has to do with being popular, because like we said, Jesus is really popular at this point. We know that's not going to last, and by the time he comes down to the cross, there are going to be lots of people who have deserted him. And how many of those have come to him saying, Jesus, I am willing to go wherever you want me to go? That was as long as Jesus went where they thought he ought to go. Was not in their mindset that this guy is saying to Jesus, I am willing to go with you even to the very cross that you will die on. How many people have shown themselves willing to do that? Maybe he's benefited by hanging around with Jesus, because maybe he just had a free meal at Peter's house. That's where Jesus had been most recently, where he healed Peter's mother-in-law. We don't know the details, but we do know this, that Jesus can see right through everything, and Jesus knows that his motivation is all out of whack. That his reasoning is wrong. That his heart really is the issue. He's evidently a man that still is in everything for himself. You ever have that problem? You find yourself to be self-centered, at least on occasion? He believed that life with Jesus would be the easy life. And he was dead wrong. Those who follow Jesus, they do so for a lot of reasons, and one of them is they see that there is very great benefit and being associated with him, right? You do understand that. You have had great, very great and precious benefits come to you as a believer and as a follower of Jesus. But at the same time, you understand some things. And that is that we still live in a world full of sin, and truth be known, that we still have a vestige of sin in our own heart. That the problem with everyone is a wrong heart. And when there's a wrong heart, there's wrong reasons for doing things that even seem to be very right on the outside. I truly believe that very often people don't count the cost of what it means to follow Jesus. It means turning away in a great sense of from the life that you've done. Sometimes it means turning away even from family members, people that you love, people that you care about. There have been a few people down through history that have really said this in a way that makes it very clear. Jim Elliot, you've heard of Jim Elliot, right? The missionary that was killed by, one of the five missionaries killed by the Alca Indians in Ecuador back in the 1950s, I think it was. But his quote that he's most noted for is this, is, "He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain that which he cannot lose." Did he and his family know what it means to follow Jesus, even to places you don't want to go to? One of the interesting things is his wife Elizabeth went back after that all happened, and she was one of the people responsible for bringing the gospel to the Alca Indians. When I was new in the faith, there were particular books that I read, and I read one written by John MacArthur called The Gospel According to Jesus, and in that book he said this, because I've always heard this, that salvation is free. And I just want to say this to you this morning. You may be hearing me say that salvation actually costs something. You need to understand that there is a cost that comes, but we know that salvation is a free gift. The cost comes after salvation comes. John MacArthur said salvation is a free gift, but in the end it costs you everything. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, World War II, a German pastor, Lutheran pastor, who was able to get out of Germany and come to the United States before things got so terribly bad, so terribly wrong. He was here living the easy life, the comfy life. He was very well known by then, and he was teaching in some of the seminaries, and, you know, he was a famous person in a sense. He could have stayed here, where it's all comfy, warm, and cozy. But he chose to go back to Germany to fight the good fight, to run the good race. He died by hanging as the Allied forces were moving in to the area he was in. He was one of the last few people to die in World War II, all because of his faith. Following Jesus can be simply a popular thing to do. But it always comes when people don't really count the cost. I was just sharing with Mark and Ruth this morning. As I was growing up, one of the great challenges for me and people who are Christians was a hypocrisy that seemed to be run amok, you know, all around me. People professing this, that, and the other, and not really seeing much of it materialize in the way they live their lives. It's one of the reasons I stayed away from the church for so long. It was only when I saw a different picture that I returned. There was a fellow named Alan Lee. He was a missionary. And he came to Seven Rivers one Sunday morning, and it was after I just started visiting on a pretty regular basis. And I met a man who got it, a man who knew that discipleship means giving up every worldly thing that people here lay hold so dearly to. Sold everything, he and Sally sold everything they had, took their kids to Uganda, their young family. How many people do you know? How many Christians do you know would even give consideration to doing something as drastic, as radical as that? For the purpose, the only purpose, of bringing the gospel to native Africans. Most of you have heard us talk about Michael and Cindy Erb. Most of you know them. They were here for, I don't know how many years, 5 years, 6 years. Let me tell you something. When Michael and Cindy walked up to me one Sunday morning after church, I think everybody else had left the building. I was the last one out, and I was coming down the hall, and here are Mike and Cindy, and when I saw them, I knew something was coming, and it wasn't what I really wanted to hear. And that is, we decided that we're going to go to Honduras as full-time missionaries. Let me tell you, there was something in me at that point that wanted to scream up and say, yes, 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 you get it. You really do get it, don't you? But let me tell you, there was another part of me that was crying. The selfish part. Because I knew that it would be a great cost, not only to them, but to the church, to our family. We are very close to Michael and Cindy, and we have been for years. They have more or less adopted Caroline. Caroline is a free pass to go and stay with them whenever she wants to, as long as she wants to be there. Michael and I have spent lots of hours working side by side, both in Honduras and even before that. My first encounter really with Michael, well, they had come to the church, and I'd spoken to him here, but Lori and I were getting ready to go on vacation over to St. Augustine. My parents used to have that place over there, and every year we would go over there for a week or two. And so we were going, and there's some things I had to do with a boat before we could go because the deck had rotted out. It was wood. And so I was desperately trying to get it fixed by replacing it with aluminum plate before we went to the beach, because you got to take the boat to the beach so you can fish, right? And so I was working on the boat one early morning, and here comes Michael. I don't know how he even knew I was doing what I was doing. And he just stepped in, and, you know, he and I worked on it all that day and didn't get finished. And he came back the next day, and we finished up and all that. But that began a friendship between two guys that has been a long one now. And I don't know if you know it or not, but I helped Michael a lot when he was renovating Grace and Harold's house down in at the lake. And so it got to the point that, you know, when I needed somebody, Michael came, and when Michael needed somebody, I went. See, guys, ministry costs. And sometimes it costs people you really love a lot. Do you think Michael and Cindy didn't realize the price that people here would have to pay for them going? Grace, Cindy's mom, in the beginning, she was just not what she wanted to hear at all. Her husband had recently died. She finally had some freedom to spend more and more time with Michael and Cindy and with her grandchildren. They counted the cost, but they went nonetheless. When we profess faith in Jesus, my friends, we do a lot of things, and one of those is that we commit to follow him wherever he goes, wherever he wants us to go. Very often it's going to be places we don't really care to go. Firstly, for Michael and Cindy, they fell in love with Honduras before they actually committed to go, so that was not so much of an issue with them. Jesus said to him, "The foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." Do you understand that the Bible describes Jesus as a man of sorrows? As a man, let me tell you, I really believe this, that Jesus has suffered loneliness in a magnitude, in a way that none of the rest of us ever will. We think that we're lonely. Let me tell you something. Jesus knows what real, true, heart-wrenching loneliness is. Experienced it when he was hanging on the cross and his disciples deserted him. Those who loved him the most, those who were closest to him the most, those who had seen him do the most, those who had listened to him say the most. My point here, guys, is Jesus doesn't call us or ask us to do something that he has not already done, has not experienced in a greater way than we ever will himself. See, Jesus was like Peter and John in some ways, but in a lot of ways, Jesus was very different than Peter and John. There are ways in which there has never been anyone like Jesus. There has never been anyone who suffered in the way that Jesus has suffered. He gave up the throne of heaven, the throne room of heaven, to come into this world, to live as a man, to live a life that was a hard life, a difficult life that started in the manger in a stable. And it was that way all the way through. Well, we know that Capernaum kind of became his headquarters, the headquarters of his mission. He worked from Capernaum through these mostly 3 years that he spent in Galilee, teaching and preaching and healing and casting out demons and doing all other sorts of miracles. Nazareth is close by, but if you read the Gospels, you can find that Jesus went to Nazareth once or maybe twice, and other than that, if Mary wanted to see Jesus, she had to come to him. He didn't go to her. Today we would classify Jesus as a homeless person. For those 3 years, he never had a home. He never knew where he was going to sleep. Well, he did. My whole point, guys, is Jesus has gone places. He's never asked anyone to go anywhere that he has not gone himself already. Ever. I just want to remind us this morning that following Jesus means a lot of things, like self-denial, suffering, loneliness, unrelenting service to people who sometimes don't appear to appreciate it one iota. And other disciples, this wasn't one of the 12, this was another one, because other people were called disciples other than just the 12 guys, okay? Said to him, "Lord, permit me to first go and bury my father." Remember, the first guy came willing to saying that he would be willing to drop everything and follow Jesus. This person, on the other hand, obviously has some priorities in life, and Jesus is not the top one, is the point here. Most of us, if we looked upon this, and when we read it, you feel this, you think this, you say, "Jesus, can't you give a guy a break? His father died." Right? Isn't that kind of your first reaction to this? It sounds to me like the man was doing what you told him to do. Didn't you tell him earlier that he's supposed to honor his mother and his father? Sounds like he's doing what he's supposed to do, and you're telling him not to. Well, why does Jesus use this man as an example? So that we understand. This is an extreme example of what we're talking about here.
Because it's easy to give up a little bit of your money. It's easy to give up a little bit of your time. It's easy to give up a little bit of this and a little bit of that. It's a lot harder when it is more precious and core things. Again, Jesus is not asking this man to do something he hasn't done already. He had to leave his Father in heaven to come into the world. Did you understand that when you've heard about the Ten Commandments, I assume, right? Do you know what they are? I mean, if someone asks you, what are the Ten Commandments? Could you actually tell that person what the Ten Commandments are? Let me just say this. If you can't, shame on you. Get up off your duff and learn those babies. That's the least we can do, right? Did you understand that there's an order of priority that's established in those commandments? In other words, those Ten Commandments don't all bear equal weight. That some of them are more important. They're all important. Every single one of them is important. And every one of them applies to us. And God, this is God's expectation for us. Maybe unrealistic. Right? But there's a definite order of priority, even in the Ten Commandments. What you will find is the first four commandments have to do with our relationship with God. The last six have to do with our relationships with other people. Even those first four, what is the first one? You shall have no other gods before me. Do you understand that in a sense Jesus was telling this man that you have a God that comes before me and it happens to be your Father? Jesus summarizes all of those 10 and 2 commandments. One is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and strength. And the other one is to love your neighbor as yourself. There's a priority. And the priority that comes over and over again is God is the priority. Jesus is the priority. He needs to be above and beyond everything else. And as long as he's not, things are never going to be right. Do you understand that if Jesus is your priority, then your marriage is going to be a whole lot better than it would be without it? Do you understand that if your priority is Jesus, then your relationships with other people are going to benefit wonderfully and beautifully and magnificently because of that? Let me ask you, where do you think you lie as far as Jesus' priorities go? Well, you need to understand that the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, you've loved each other eternally, perfectly, for all of eternity. That hasn't stopped, and it's not going to stop. But you would be hard-pressed to find any other being in all of existence that is a greater priority of Jesus Christ than you are. Now, doesn't that say a bunch? And hasn't he shown it over and over and over and over? If we weren't Jesus' priority, where do you think we would be right now? You know, we should feel some shame, I think, but at the same time, we should be exhilarated. And when we really weigh what we're talking about here, that in all of existence, the only persons that are more important to Jesus are the Father and the Holy Spirit than you are, and I am. That's an amazing thing. that should convict us, but at the same time, it should lift us. Do you understand that's how important you are to Christ? How do we know for certain Jesus is our number one priority? Let me tell you, if someone came up to me this morning and said, Jesus is my number one priority, I would think they lost their mind, or they really didn't know themselves. They didn't know the darkness, the depth of the blackness that was still in their own heart. We all fall short, every single one of us. And let me tell you something, we fall far shorter than we think we do. Our understanding of how dark our heart is just scratching the surface of the surface. If Jesus really just opened up that heart, if he took it and he opened it up and let what's in it come out, we would be horrified, every single one of us. Fortunately, he doesn't do that for us. Because if we ever really saw all of it, the ugliness, the selfishness, self-centeredness, self. What does that do? What it should do is drive us to the cross. It's a lesson over and over again that we must, in fact, have Jesus and have as much of Jesus as we can possibly have of Jesus, because Jesus is the only thing that's ever made a difference and is the only thing that's ever going to make a difference. What are some real and practical ways that you can maybe get some idea of where your priorities really are? Well, let me just throw some things out there. Consider the way you spent your money this week. Look at your checkbook. Consider the way you spent your time this week. Look at your calendar. Did we spend this week serving other people, serving Jesus by serving other people, or did we spend most of the week serving self? Consider where you're willing to go for Jesus. When Lori and I went to Uganda, I thought it was going to be a great adventure, and let me tell you, it turned out to be a great adventure, something that I'll relish for the rest of my existence. But I didn't go for Jesus. I went for Keith, for the experience. Some people would have said, you were willing to go a long way. There was a pastor's wife, when I came back, she told me, she said, I could never do anything like that. I could never go to a place like that for Jesus. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. Because it was nothing. Other than we missed our family terribly. And our kids. Consider who you hang around with and for what reasons. Consider who and what you listen to. Consider what you say and how you say it. So where are you? I mean, you're honestly able to say Jesus is my priority above everything else. Laura and I went to a marriage conference that was really good, because it's all about the heart.
Every problem that we've ever had is because of the problem of our own heart or the heart of somebody else or the heart of people corporately. It's a heart issue. Phil sent me a note this week about Johnny Erickson, Tata. She was talking with some or a letter or something. But this is what she said. Someone, you know, basically, you know, that she's in a wheelchair. She was paralyzed because she dove into a pool and broke her neck when she was not beyond, much beyond her teen years. Lauren and I saw her in a conference many years ago, a Legionnaire conference. Someone recently asked her this, and that is, won't you just be glad when you get to heaven, Johnny, because then you'll have your legs again and you'll be able to move around and all that? Aren't you really looking forward to having new legs? What she had to say was this: what I'm really looking forward to is having a new heart. That perfect heart that Christ has promised us. We don't have it yet, but we will have it. There will come a time when Jesus will, in fact, be the top priority in your life, and that will go on for all of eternity. And let me tell you, every other relationship you have with every other being is going to be benefited wonderfully because of that. We're close to each other. Many people in this room have known each other for years. We consider each other to be family. There are people in this room I know I could call at any time for any reason, and they would be there in the blink of an eye. And they know the same thing is true for Lori and I. So we're close to people. But you understand that we're going to be way, 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 way more close to each other in the kingdom. Never a coarse word, never a misunderstanding. Always wanting the very best more for other people than we want for ourselves. Selfishness will die. We're not there yet. That day's a-coming. Sounds better all the time, doesn't it? I don't know about you, but I'm just sick and tired of sin. Sick, 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 sick. I've had it up to here. And I'm not talking about yours. I'm talking about mine. Patooey, patooey. If I could throw it up, I would. All over you. It's coming, my friends. It's a coming because of what he's done and what he's still doing and what he will do. Believe it.